Welcome to the Federalist Society's Practice Group podcast. The following podcast, hosted by the Federalist Society's Labor and Employment Law Practice Group, was recorded on Friday, October 24, 2014, during a live courthouse steps telephone conference call held exclusively for Federalist Society members. Good afternoon, and welcome to a special courthouse steps edition of the Federalist Society's Practice Group telephone conference calls. And today's call is on employee security screening. The Supreme Court decides who pays. My name is Christian Corrigan, and I'm the Director of Publications here at the Federalist Society. As always, please note that all expressions of opinion are those of the expert on today's call, and also that this call is being recorded for use as a podcast in the future. Today, we're pleased to welcome our expert, Karen Harned, who is Executive Director of the National Federation of Independent Business Small Business Legal Center, who attended the oral argument and is going to describe the case and then followed by your questions. So, without any further ado, Karen, the floor is yours.
Thanks, Kristen, and welcome everybody on this lovely fall Friday. I guess it was 2 weeks ago the Supreme Court heard the case of Integrity Staffing versus BESC, and interestingly for our community, or actually just anybody that follows the Supreme Court, Paul Clement, who represented petitioners in that argument, presented his 75th argument to the Supreme Court that day. This was his 75th argument before them. To start this discussion, I thought I would just give you brief background on the laws at issue here. So it's the Fair Labor Standards Act, which was enacted in 1938, and it sets the standards for the basic minimum wage and overtime pay of time and a half that non-exempt employees who work more than 40 hours in a week will get. It applies to most private and public employers, and under the FLSA, all work is presumptively compensable. Well, I guess it was 8 short years after the FLSA was enacted in 1946, the Supreme Court ruled in a case called Anderson versus Mount Clemens Pottery Company that preliminary work activities that were controlled by the employer and for the employer's benefit were also compensable. So Congress, reacting to that, and I'm sure an aggressive lobbying push from businesses, in 1947 enacted what is called the Portal to Portal Act. And among other things, that law said that travel to and from work was incident to employment and not compensable by the employer. In 1956, in Steiner versus Mitchell, the Supreme Court considered the scope of the Portal to Portal Act. And in that decision, the court said that the Portal to Portal Act only required compensation for tasks that are an, quote, integral and indispensable part of the principal activities for which covered workmen are employed, end quote. So that brings us to today, and I'm sure you've heard along the years, maybe if you follow the court, of, you know, donning and doffing cases concerning whether or not employees are to be compensated for putting on clothing and other protective equipment for their jobs or not. And honestly, the case law on that is not, it's gone both ways. But in this case, Integrity Staffing came up from a Ninth Circuit decision reversing the district court, a district court decision that dismissed a lawsuit that two former employees of Integrity Staffing Solutions brought, Jesse Busk and Lori Castro, and they brought this as part of the class action lawsuit against Integrity. Integrity Staffing provides warehouse space and staffing to clients like Amazon.com. And Busk and Lori both worked in warehouses in Nevada, filling orders placed by Amazon.com customers. At the end of each day, all the workers had to clear a security checkpoint. Much like we all do when we fly, employees had to remove their keys, wallets, belts, and pass through a metal detector and also submit to a search. The whole process could take up to 25 minutes. In 2010, Busk and Castro sued Integrity, arguing This violated the Fair Labor Standards Act, as well as Nevada state labor laws. The district court dismissed the complaint, saying clearing security was not compensable. The Ninth Circuit reversed the district court's dismissal with regard to the post-preliminary security screening process. The Ninth ruled that the district court should have determined whether the security screenings were, quote, integral and indispensable, end quote, to the employee's work under the Fair Labor Standards Act, rather than just dismissing the suit out of hand. Additionally, the Ninth Circuit concluded that the purpose of the screening, which was to prevent employee theft, quote, stems from the nature of the employee's work, end quote, which entailed, quote, access to merchandise, end quote. In its petition for cert, Integrity noted that the Ninth Circuit's decision was in conflict with decisions in the Second and the Eleventh Circuits. Both of those had held security screenings were not compensable under the Portal to Portal Act. In fact, the Second Circuit said that security screenings were the modern paradigm of activities covered by the Portal to Portal Act. In its petition for cert, Integrity argued that if the Ninth Circuit decision were allowed to stand, it could impose massive retroactive liability on employers. The Supreme Court granted review of the case, specifically asking whether time spent undergoing security clearances is compensable under the Fair Labor Standards Act as amended by the Portal to Portal Act. So the players, as I mentioned, Integrity was represented by Paul Clement. Interestingly, the federal government, represented by Curtis Gannon, weighed in on the side of Integrity staffing in this case. It noted the interest of the Department of Labor in enforcing and interpreting the FLSA and Portal to Portal Act regulations, and it noted the U.S. interest as an employer of employees covered by the FLSA who were required to go through physical security checks in many settings. The employees were represented by Mark Thierman from Reno, Nevada. So this oral argument actually ended up being more interesting than a lot of people, I think, predicted because of the hypos. And no sooner did Clement get out his first few words than Kagan introduced one, talking about the bank teller that deals with the cash register or the casino dealer who closes out. And 20 minutes of that work, that can take 20 minutes, and doing that is an anti-theft-related purpose. Is that the same, she asked. And Clement, with a strong assist from Scalia, noted that those activities are part of the job. He distinguished them in that way. He said that courts have struggled with preliminary and post-preliminary activities that occur at the workstation, but they have generally not struggled with activities occurring after you've left the workstation and are going to the door, as is the case in this instance. Then Ginsburg chimed in and said, isn't it relevant that because there aren't enough security checkers, it's taking 25 minutes to get through? And Clement noted that, first of all, that was an allegation that had not been proven and that it really wasn't a uniform 25 minutes in any regard. But he said, regardless of that, it is irrelevant because time spent generally is not a factor in these portal-to-portal cases. Mount Clemens, for example, did not treat time spent punching in and out as compensable under portal-to-portal, and he noted that if they had, the first one in would have been paid 8 minutes more than others, so you can easily see how this would be unfair because you couldn't uniformly apply it across all employees that are standing in line to get in or out of work. Sotomayor asked Clement if a principal activity of work was that the work the employee is doing is benefiting the employer. And Clement responded by saying that work under the FLSA, the Fair Labor Standards Act, includes most any activity that benefits the employer. But he stressed that the Portal to Portal Act created an exception for preliminary and post-preliminary activities. So the first step is to analyze whether or not an activity is pre- or post-preliminary, and then you ask whether or not it's integral and indispensable to a principal activity of that employee's work. Clement argued that security screenings, of course, don't meet that test, in his opinion. Kennedy questioned why the employer couldn't just hire some more screeners. And Clement responded that you can almost always argue in these instances that the employer could do more. Scalia jumped in with an example of forcing the employer to move his factory closer to the city and to its workers, which demonstrated the potential slippery slope of that argument. During Assistant Solicitor General Gannon's argument for the government, there was a lot of discussion between Kennedy and Kagan in particular regarding whether or not it was relevant that the security screenings were done for the benefit of the employer. Gannon noted that they likely were, but again went back to Clement's point that the screenings were exempt from compensation under the Portal to Portal Act. Thierman argued for the petitioners that the question was whether or not the screenings were a principal activity, not whether or not they were integral to the job. He seemed to define principal activity as anything that the employer tells you to do, and he wanted to limit the Portal to Portal Act exceptions to checking in and checking out. He kept on noting that this extra stage of providing security screenings was the straw that was on the camel's back, that now you're, if you let this go, you'll just be able to, you know, the court will be basically giving employers the right to continue to add on to that egress process, if you will. Roberts noted that the employer does not hire the employees to go through screening and that that is not their purpose at work. In an exchange with Scalia, Thierman wanted to distinguish between the overall function of a job, which was, in this case, moving merchandise without losing it, and certain tasks workers are hired to perform. He said, when you look at an overall function, security screenings fit into that. He said that the principal activity doesn't mean important. It just means one of your job tasks. So since screenings are a job task, they are a principal function, and they must be compensated under the FLSA and not exempt under the Portal to Portal Act. There also was a long discussion regarding drug testing, and that really seemed to be Thierman's best case because he was trying to make similar, sorry, I'm tongue-tied, the idea of drug testing and, you know, the honesty of employees with regards to that and security screenings. And drug testing has been ruled to be compensable under the Fair Labor Standards Act. But on rebuttal, Clement said that he distinguished that, saying that, again, this doesn't, unlike drug testing, this happens on the way out the door, that if you, again, on Portal to Portal Act exemptions, if you were not to have that, you would be incentivizing people to get to the back of the line so that they could get paid more. He said also that just because an employer, this is Clement again, just because an employer requires you to do something like go through screening, that doesn't make it compensable because otherwise then you would have no activity that qualified for the exemptions that were explicitly laid out in the Portal to Portal Act. So that is my summary of the case and of argument, and I'm happy to take any questions people have.
All right. Thanks, Karen. Let's open the floor to questions. In a moment, you'll hear a prompt that will say the floor mode is on, and after that, to request the floor, enter star and then the pound key. So again, if you want to ask a question, press star and then the pound key. Karen, just as a general question, if I heard the figure correctly, it's that employee theft costs retail industry $16 billion a year?
Oh, yeah, that may be, I mean, yes, probably. it is a big issue for all employers. I know that the research we've done has indicated that it is a big issue for small employers. I should also say that we did file a brief in this case because, yes, this is an ongoing issue that employers are struggling with.
Well, it looks like we have a quiet audience today. It must be the Friday afternoon crowd. Well, while we're waiting, see if we can get a question or two. Any other thoughts on the case or anything you didn't cover that you wanted to get at before we get off the line?
Not really, other than, you know, I think it did help quite a bit, not surprisingly, that the solicitor weighed in on behalf of Integrity Staffing. Breyer in particular, and not surprisingly, seemed to think that was very important, and also, you know, I think that is going to be helpful. It appeared that would be helpful with regards to his vote, and Kagan also noted it. So I am going into the case, I thought that this was going to be a much closer call, and it could end up being a 5-4 decision, but after argument, honestly, I came out relatively encouraged, thinking that Integrity Staffing would very well likely prevail, and prevail by a decent number. So we will see, because the solicitor and Paul were both making essentially the same arguments. The solicitor put a little bit of a different gloss on it, but substantively, I think everybody viewed it as the same.
All right. Well, let's do for those remaining on the call, let's do a last call for questions. If you've thought of a question or comment to discuss with our expert, you can press star and the pound key. Well, Karen, it looks like you did an extraordinarily exceptional job describing the case, because you've left our audience speechless, it seems.
There you go.
Well, if that's it, let's do one more last call. We'll certainly try to bring you, once the decision comes down, we'll definitely try to bring you or another expert on to discuss the decision and see how everything turned out. But I guess that's it. We're under time, and Karen, unless you have any other thoughts.
No, that's it. Thank you, though.
All right. Well, thanks everybody for joining us on this Friday afternoon. A reminder that you can catch this podcast, as well as podcasts of all our other Teleforum conference calls, on our website, and to stay tuned for other Teleforum conference calls, and particularly now that the court's term is back in session, or the new term is in session, more of our Courthouse Steps Teleforums on our website. And so on behalf of the Federal Society, Karen, thanks for offering the analysis and being with us today on the call, and thanks to our audience for tuning in. And until next time, we're adjourned.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this Practice Group podcast. For materials related to this podcast and other Federalist Society multimedia, please visit the Federalist Society's website at federalistsociety.org/multimedia.